Brady and Joe coming up.
You know, Nate mentioned to me last night, he said, yeah, the list has been a lot longer than in years past. So injuries come up. They do. They come up at different points in the season. I'd rather have them now than in the playoffs, right? So that's my hope at this point. That said, I am concerned with, like I've said, some of the pieces being out there together, especially some of our newer players, our younger players. It's hard to show up in this league first game of the season and be ready to go. Things like training camp, things like going away, things like practicing against other teams, preseason games, it's all important.
Bills head coach Sean McDermott wrapping training camp. He referenced their Bills head athletic trainer, Nate Breske, and all the injuries through training camp. We'll get a look back at camp and a look ahead to preseason game number one. Joining us on the Western Hotline, Chris Brown, of course, of One Bills Live, and calling the game on Saturday for Bills and Giants. Chris, good morning. Injuries. We spent half our time at camp listing the injuries during our shows.
Yeah, and as Sean said, the list has been longer this summer. I don't think there's any debate about that than in recent years. And, you know, to his point, this time of year, you're probably less concerned with the final score on the board at the end of the game. You're more concerned with fitting, as he said, the pieces together. Who plays well off of one another, particularly on defense, where they're trying to cull together a lot of new pieces, if not in the starting lineup, certainly in the rotation on that D-line, which combinations of players play most effectively together. That's the big part of this evaluation this preseason. And if you're down a couple of those players, you know, you've got some concern. You get to the regular season if some of these guys can't get back.
Chris Brown with us. Is there anybody that comes to mind, Chris, for tomorrow's game that maybe didn't have, you know, the flashiest training camp while we were at St. John Fisher, that if they had a big day, the vibes would go up?
Yeah, we haven't really seen much from Laviska Shenault, right? You know, I think a lot of people thought that this was a guy who, you know, he certainly passes the eyeball test. I mean, he is put together at 6'1", 227. And I think there were some thought that, okay, this guy has worked with Chris Tabor before, the special teams coordinator. You know, if he can really show up and show out, and granted, you don't see a lot of full-speed special teams drills, so the preseason was going to have to settle that competition between him and Codrington. But at the receiver position, you were hoping he could at least give you something there, demonstrate an ability to block in the run game, and, you know, maybe make a play here or there, and perhaps even factor into some of that pre-snap motion. Because I look at him, guys, and I see a potential, you know, Cordarrelle Patterson, if you want to use him in that fashion, because he's built the same exact way. We haven't seen any of that, and we haven't really seen him factor into the passing game all that much, even with this team so devoid of receivers due to injury. So I think he's a guy that's got to really step up and flash here in the preseason.
Yeah, it's been interesting watching the receiver, I guess, the hierarchy play out. Coleman's been healthy and available the whole time, and I think by all accounts he's had a really nice camp. Palmer, a little bit of an injury, groin issue, right? Shakir got hurt. I mean, almost everybody else seemed to get dinged up. Tyrell Shavers as well. McDermott went out of his way to praise how Shavers is trying to make this team, which, I don't know, Chris, you think, let's start there with Shavers. Kenny, because of the injuries, I mean, last year it sounded like it might have been his time, and he did get in some game action. This time it sounds like he's playing hurt at camp to prove himself, and McDermott is calling him a true Buffalo Bill. Like, you know, the coach has got high praise for a guy that's seems like he's always on the bubble and can't quite seem to find his way to a full-time spot.
Yeah, and could he get caught up in a numbers game again? He certainly could, because I think you can easily find your way to naming five guys prior to calling his name. And are they keeping five? Are they keeping six? You know, what's the situation at tight end, and how many are you keeping there? So those are all the number concerns that you have to navigate your way through as a coaching staff to get your best, quote-unquote, best 53. I don't think it's any secret that Sean McDermott enormously appreciates guys that just put their nose to the grindstone and work. And Tyrell Shavers would certainly fit into that category. And so I think he's a guy that has clearly earned the respect of the head coach and clearly does everything the right way. And maybe more than anybody else over the last 3+ years has respected the process. If you want to talk about somebody that has earned it, Tyrell Shavers might be at the top of your list. And look, he's made plays. It's not like it's like, yeah, the guy's a try-hard guy, but does he really do anything? He's made plays. So I think he's backed up the hard work with results as well. Now, carrying that into the preseason is going to be important as well. But if he goes ahead and does that, yeah, I mean, he's got a shot, a legitimate shot.
On Curtis Samuel, who basically misses camp with a hamstring injury, I wonder how the Bills feel about him. You know, they sign him, and he's got experience with the offensive coordinator last year. It's the turf toe that keeps him out for a while. Allen points out they kind of can't get on the same page just because of that. Like, everything was kind of delayed. And then late in the season, we started to see that pop going into the Denver playoff game as well. Do you feel like the Bills would have a level of, you know, whatever, it's frustrating to see him miss so much time, but knowing the skill set, the talent, and the fit started to show what it is supposed to be?
Yeah, and I know that I was just as encouraged as the next person about what we saw from him at the end of the season, not just the Denver playoff game, but the Kansas City playoff game. I mean, him and James Cook were the two guys that Josh Allen was relying upon the most in the second half of that football game. And I believe Samuel had the go-ahead touchdown for them in the fourth quarter, you know, before the ultimate outcome happened. So you were seeing some really good things from Curtis Samuel. The problem is, there's an availability issue there, and you know we're back where we were last year at this time. You know, when he had a couple of injuries that he was dealing with and trying to play through. You know, it's nobody's fault. It just happens. And I know that based on how his contract is structured, you know, there's no thought of moving on from Curtis Samuel, not this year anyway. So I think you're in a situation where you just have to kind of let it play out. You're still about a month from the opener and see where he can get between now and then. Can he get on the field? And then more importantly, can he stay on the field? And what are you getting from him? I think that's kind of how you have to play this out at this point in time.
Chris, I think there's a backup quarterback competition probably to be had here in the preseason. Was there anything really that separated Mitch Trubisky and Mike White in training camp to your eyes? I mean, I don't think there's any debate Trubisky might have the early lead here. He's the incumbent. He's been here before, the contract, and he's starting tomorrow.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it is a competition, and I think the proof will come out in the preseason. I think that's where you really see and can evaluate, you know, who has been the superior performer. And I think this coaching staff will give both players equal time with the quote-unquote starters or second teamers, as it were, so as not to handicap anybody, you know, with third teamers to work with and playing against third teamers. I think they really want to get as accurate an evaluation as they can on those two guys. I thought Mitch Trubisky's best practice may have been the blue and red scrimmage. He was fantastic in that practice from start to finish in a practice, you know, that Josh barely did any teamwork. I think he threw 4 passes in 7-on-7, and then he had a baseball hat on. He was fantastic. I mean, he's facing all-out blitzes, throwing off his back foot and dropping it in the back pylon in the end zone to Dalton Kincaid in double coverage. I mean, it might have been the best throw I've seen Mitch Trubisky make in a Bills uniform. You have those moments and those practices, and then unfortunately he did not have a great throw in Wednesday's practice. It was a poor decision, and it winds up being an interception. You're going to have those, but all of them count, right? So they all go into the evaluation. But, yeah, through the course of the practices at training camp, I just feel like we've seen more Trubisky than White, and I'll be the first to tell you I haven't counted their snaps, but it just feels like I've noticed Trubisky more in the practice setting than I've noticed Mike White.
Chris Brown joining us on the Western Hotline. Bills and Giants tomorrow. Defensively, Chris, as we shift to that side of the ball, there's been a lot of change over there and, you know, a fair amount of returning players as well. I feel like, you know, as we start with injuries on the offensive side, we're there on the defensive side as well. Of course, Maxwell Harrison and his injury, which keeps him out a little bit. it's maybe ironic's not the right word, but when Hairston goes down, we fear another kind of Cole Bishop situation. And then soon after, Cole Bishop is kind of back in the Cole Bishop situation where he's having issues staying on the field as well. And I feel like we're kind of right back where we were this time last year, where there's snake bit in the secondary and the injuries back there might lead to some issues to start off.
Yeah, I'm less concerned with corner because of how good Trey White has looked, and I'm more concerned about safety, not just because you're down Cole Bishop, but you're down Taylor Rapp as well, who, you know, Sean McDermott said yesterday is going to miss about a week with a knee injury. So this was the tandem that you had penciled into the lineup, and this is their first opportunity to get some time on the field together in as close to a game-like setting as you're going to find, and they're both unavailable. That's a concern because it's a new pairing, and they need as much time on the field as you can possibly get them in game-like situations. So that's not good. There's no other way to slice it. Can they make up for lost time? We're going to have to wait and see, but that was the penciled-in starting tandem. You're not going to see it in any capacity tomorrow afternoon. You got to hope that both can get back and can play with one another before the preseason is out, because going against that Ravens team in week one, if you have limited time on the field together, I'm a little wary.
Yeah, McDermott kind of spoke to this a little bit yesterday about, you know, he'd rather have the injuries now than the playoffs, but that it can make it tougher. I mean, the safety injuries, the linebacker injuries in and out, the suspensions on the D-line. I feel like the managing of the roster and reps, maybe there's been more of that this summer on one side of the ball, Chris, than there maybe ever has been.
Yeah, and, you know, it's the side of the ball that has the most new stuff to pull together, right? So you want them on the field so you can get the proper evaluation, know that, okay, I'm set at this position, let's move on to here. Okay, let's see what these combinations look like here on the defensive front. You know, I think it's been hard for the defensive staff to really hone in on what works best with the players they have on the field in terms of scheme and play calling for down and distance situations, because they just haven't had them out there enough. I'm sure they have a semblance of an idea of what they'd like to do, but you want that confirmed for you on the field. The number one thing for coaches is knowing that they can trust players in certain situations, and that trust is reaffirmed through reps on the field being executed properly. So when players are out of the lineup and coaches don't have that, it gives them a little odds to guys.
Chris Brown on the Western Hotline. Chris, on James Cook, it's been a big-time story of camp, and you know the twists and turns, they haven't been that big in the last week. I found it so interesting that McDermott, when asked if he expected Cook to be there, said yes, and then said, well, I expect all players to be there. Meanwhile, there have been several reports that the two sides maybe aren't as far apart as people might think. And I don't know if there's an end in sight. I don't know what's going to happen with James Cook. He's going to the walkthroughs. He's going to the meetings. He's just skipping practice. Yesterday, Allen kind of takes up for him to a degree. You know, we desperately want him out here. He's handling generational kind of business. Like, you know, it's a sticky spot. And I don't know if you have a prediction on the resolution or a predicted timeline, but we're kind of just hanging in limbo right now.
Yeah, we are. I think that, you know, you've just got to kind of let those things play out, you know, at the level they're playing out, which is obviously the front office and his agency. And, you know, you got to hope that there's some common ground that can be found. I think a lot of us hoped that with the Kyren Williams contract, even though he plays significantly more snaps in the Rams offense than Cook does in Buffalo, you have a guy from the same draft class, comparable numbers in terms of production over the last 2 years. And to me, the parameters on a new deal are pretty much laid out for you by the Rams. I thought that might, you know, break the dam, so to speak, and, you know, let negotiations flow. But that hasn't happened to this point. Does it change? I suppose it could. James says he wants to be in Buffalo. So, I don't know. I just think the number that was thrown out at the beginning of the spring is unrealistic. The Kyren Williams contract proves that. So you got to hope that some people have some come to realism moments and figure it out, because I think both parties know how much they benefit. You know, the Bills obviously benefit from having Cook in their lineup. I think Cook knows how good a fit he is for this offense. So you just got to hope that the two sides can reach some kind of compromise.
Yeah, I'm not sure how many people think he might miss games. Joe and I have talked about this. Like, we don't think it'll get that far, but if it were to happen, or if they're to move on from him and find a taker, like, would you be concerned about what would happen with the offense? It's an offense that has, you know, a proliferation of contributors. We know that, but Cook is their explosive piece, and as you mentioned in Kansas City, he was one of the guys that was the reason they were in that game.
Right. I think he's the second most dynamic athlete on the offensive side of the ball next to Josh Allen. And you even heard Sean McDermott say it after the season was over in his season-ending press conference. You need 2 to 3 elite talents on each side of the ball. And for the Bills, that's Allen and Cook. Could someone like Keon Coleman or, you know, Khalil Shakir perhaps get to that level at some point? Sure. But right here, right now, it's Cook and Allen. Those are your elite talents on offense in terms of the skill position players. So, you know, he's a critical piece on the offensive side of the ball. You know, if you have to move on from him or whatever, you better get a comparable talent coming back to your roster in return, because in my estimation, you would be down a major piece for this season.
Do you think, feel like, Chris, as this hold-in has been going on, I almost feel like maybe there's different types of hold-ins. Like, I wonder if some players around the league, their hold-in is more about, like, let me make things as uncomfortable as possible. Like, let me make this awkward, like, kind of help push the team into doing something. Whereas the Cook one, I don't know, McDermott doesn't come off as it being that way. Allen doesn't. You know, I think Bean maybe is let down, but just by the fact that he had a streak going of, like, never having something like this happen, and this is the first time. But he's doing the mental stuff. McDermott said he's doing walkthrough stuff. You feel like with Cook, it's just more about, I'm not putting my body at risk than it's, I'm trying to make things uncomfortable?
Yeah, I would probably agree with that if you forced me to make a choice. It's kind of like James said, it's business. I don't think he likes business getting in the way of him doing his job, because he's wired a certain way, which is what made him so attractive to the Bills in the first place. He's all about the work and putting the work in, competing and excelling. He's cut from the same cloth as a lot of the other players on this roster. And that's why he's got so much respect in the front office and amongst the coaching staff, because he does his work, you know, he's quiet as kept, and he excels on the field. It's hard to be disappointed in that. And business has kind of compromised, I think, his own personal work ethic. So I'm sure he's not loving it, but I think he knows, or at least he believes, this is the step he has to take to try to get to a place contract-wise where he'll be satisfied.
Final preseason game at Highmark. I don't, you know, a lot of special moments and, you know, a special kids' day, right? Like, that's the kind of thing where it is a preseason game, but we were saying earlier, Chris, like, you never know. The secondary market, the cheapest ticket to this game is $28, which is kind of unheard of in the preseason. So you might have an eager crowd, because you never know who's going to be at that Highmark Stadium for the last time.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a lot of last times this year, right? It's I guess if there was ever a year to be nostalgic each and every week, it's probably this season. So I think a lot of people are going to be taking a lot of long looks, you know, around the stadium, whether they get there for one game, two games, whether they're season ticket members, whatever it is, they're going to be taking long looks around when they're in that building, because they know that they're going to have to take their snapshots then, because there won't be another time.
Yeah. Thanks, Chris, and have a good game on Saturday. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, good to talk to you guys.
All right, Chris Brown, he's got the call, of course, with Eric Wood on the Bills preseason opener against the Giants. That'll be tomorrow at 1 o'clock. It's going to be hot.
It also will be, I'm trying to think, how different, because I pass it more often than a lot, how different for someone that hasn't seen the stadium project since the end of last season, how different is it going to look? How different does the outside look right now? The inside is,
I think,
the amount of work on the inside is nuts.
The outside looks different in that if you hadn't seen it when the canopy was up before.
Yeah, okay,
right. The canopy is the finishing kind of piece of like, whoa, all right.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The shell's not on it yet on the outside, but it's I think that's soon.
That's right. The wind is not yet confused.
Although, like, Allen said it in that Hard Knocks clip, like, that he couldn't really, they were talking about how, like, they couldn't really feel it. We even had that a little bit, I think, when we were there.
That's before the wind confusion stuff is even put on the outside.
Right, just by, like, the way the stadium is turned and there's
that's a full.
What did Pegula say in the thing? We scienced it.
Yeah.
Right. They scienced it.
Good.
So.
Shedeur Sanders is playing in the preseason opener for the Browns. There are games tonight, too. So if you're looking for preseason action, there were three last night, and there are games tonight. I might have to get back on my Falcons. I think I'm back in on my Falcons.
Our
Falcons.
I don't know if I want it.
You don't have enough Falcons shares? I've got enough.
I don't know that I have Darnell Mooney in like one dynasty league, and that might be it. I'm not saying I don't want Bijan Robinson. I just have never been bad enough to get Bijan Robinson. Yep.
Wow. Look at you dropping I've never been bad enough.
What?
Wow.
How do you get Bijan Robinson? How do you get McDavid? You got to be terrible.
You win a lottery. That's what I did. I won a lottery to get Bijan Robinson.
What was your season like before that?
You
didn't come from 10, did you?
No, I had two picks in the top four.
Okay, so you traded for those picks.
No, one of them was mine.
And there you go.
The other was a lottery
pick. There you go. I've never been down there.
No.
How you get him.
Look at you.
I don't have any Drake London. That's a guy I'd like because you could have got him over the years.
Is Michael Penix going to play tonight? No. Remember they said that neither quarterback was going to play. No Cousins and no Michael Penix in their preseason opener. I think that came out earlier in the week. So no Michael Penix tonight, which I'd like to see. I didn't see enough of him last year.
And no Cousins?
No Cousins.
That means, hold on a second. Does that mean, is he still there? Let me check the depth chart. No. I thought Peterman was there. He was with them at some point in the offseason, but he's not no longer on the roster, I guess.
Yeah. Neither plays tonight. Neither of those two plays tonight. So
so it's Easton Stick, it looks like.
All right. Easton Stick gets his moment. Tonight, it's Detroit, Atlanta, Cleveland, Carolina that you will see Shedeur Sanders, and Washington and New England. And I will see if Drake May has played or will play, what the Patriots have said about that.
I have to find them. Peterman might be on the Falcons. ESPN says he's Atlanta Falcons quarterback. So
you're supposed to know this as the number one Peterman follower.
It's incredible. It's been incredible to me that he's still in the league at 30. Imagine that. After the 5 interception game, if I told you, he's gonna be in the league until he's 30. He's not listed on their official roster, so I don't know what ESPN's doing.
All right, when we get back, we got a fun game to play, a call to catch up on, and I'll tell you what Mike Vrabel said about whether or not Drake May will play tonight. Because, get an eye on the competition, see if he's going to play tonight against Washington. Jeremy and Joe here on a Football Friday on WGR.
Being a student athlete is tough. A student athlete at the Ivy Leagues, even tougher. You were a student athlete at Brown and also was a tutor in calculus. Why did you choose to do that?
Well, Ivy League doesn't do scholarship, and I needed some beer money. So it was a great way for me to, calculus was something that I understood. Teammates needed help getting ready for exams, and I was broke. So that was easy solution.
Yeah, that math makes sense to me.
It's Carl Jones with Michael Hoyt. You'll hear the rest of that as part of Buffalo Kickoff Live on Channel 4 before the preseason opener. Snagged that from Carl's Twitter feed. So he had a conversation with Michael Hoyt. And again, you can see that as part of Buffalo Kickoff Live. The other reason I snagged that is because I needed Michael Hoyt. Calculus is where I tapped out on math.
Calculus?
No. Tapped out. When it comes to math, my career with math, I was, good to go, everything. 5-star prospect. Then I got to the show. Calculus being the show.
Yeah.
I was like, no. You know what? Not only, for whatever reason, I mean, I'm a senior in high school when you get to calculus, right? Not, it's just, you know what? It's not for me.
Yeah.
My math career ends right here.
Interesting.
Yeah. Not. I would never say I was someone who was bad at math. I'd say I was good at math. And then,
yeah.
You know what? Mm-mm. This is where you start to learn the formulas that people write on the boards in science fiction movies to do time travel. And I you know what?
Yeah.
I'm going to be just fine. I'll go do something else.
The thing that made it tough for me was I was taking another math class while taking calculus.
Yeah.
Stats. It was like just some stats class.
Statistics.
Statistical techniques and something. Yeah. I don't remember.
All about expected goals per 60 and things like
course.
That.
Yeah, of right, course. Right.
Yeah. Jeremy and Joe, good morning. 803-0550 and 1-888-552-550.
Speaking of numbers, very quickly, you want a very quick golf thing that I invented in my own mind yesterday that I think should be employed?
I do want that. First, I want to say Mike Vrabel says, because I teased this going to the break, what Mike Vrabel said about Drake May, that all healthy starters should all healthy players should expect to play a little bit. He doesn't know how much, so
okay.
Tonight I think you will see a little bit of Drake May. I don't know how much.
Does that mean Diggs? They're going to put Diggs on the field?
All healthy players should expect to play. That's what he said.
Wouldn't that be nuts, though?
Hmm?
The guy tore his ACL last November.
He's ready.
To his credit, he's back and practicing. No sleeve even. But what do you need to put? That would be.
He's ready.
Sketchy, I think, to put Diggs out there. So handicaps in golf, we're all accustomed to that, right? You're playing a match, you're playing a best ball match or whatever.
Yep.
There's a lot of this in other facets of life. How about a dynamic handicap as your round is going on? Because, you know, like, hey, we were playing with Adam Krautwurst, who we bring on to talk fantasy sometimes, and he's like a 20, 19 or 20. And he was playing really well. It's like, you're playing like a 13 right here. It's like, you know, if you're playing like a 13, on that day, shouldn't you be a 13? For like, you know, maybe for every par you get, you lose one on your handicap. Dynamic handy. We have dynamic ticketing in the world, right? We have dynamic a bunch of stuff. Dynamic handicaps during golf matches.
That would only hurt players who are like a 20, though.
No, if you are, it could go the other way.
I'm a 2.
You're an 11. You're an 11, right?
Okay.
You're having a horrible day. Can't hit the golf ball at all. Starts sure. going up.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, by hole 9, we revisit this after the 9. Like, Jeremy's like a 16 the rest of the way because that's how the day's going. You don't like it?
No.
I think it's good.
No.
I think
I'm thinking
good.
About the scratch player who watches, you know, he gets one bogey and you're going to, oh, no, you're not a 2 anymore. Now you're you bogey to the easiest hole.
Uh-huh.
Now you're a 3.9.
I mean, it wouldn't change on one hole, maybe.
You just said that you change it on one hole. For a par.
That's right. Yeah, but a bogey. Okay, you're right, because he'd be a scratch golfer, you're saying.
I don't know.
With a bogey.
Isn't
dynamic
that supposed
handicaps.
To be built into the handicap? Isn't it supposed to get your range
the
of
other
like,
thing
your
is,
best day
so,
your worst
Joe,
day?
You did commit a cardinal sin. What you played with someone that said that you said they're a 5 handicap,
uh-huh.
and you think they're not a 5. But the reality is, when it comes to golf, the number of times you're supposed to actually look like your handicap is 20% of the time, less than that.
Because right. a lot of times you look better and a lot
handicap
of times you look worse.
Is supposed to be your demonstrated ability, not what you are at your best.
So should we have tier-based handicaps? We do have that. That's like what tournaments are, right?
Yeah, they do that. Flights, yeah.
But like in the numbers, I mean.
But your handicap, you're not supposed to play, if you think you're a 10, you're not supposed to play like a 10 all the time.
Uh-huh.
You're supposed to often play worse than that. Most of the time.
Yeah.
It's how good can you be?
Mm-hmm. This would eliminate sandbagging, though.
Oh, I don't know about
which
that.
Is it a golf epidemic? You don't think it would eliminate? It would make it better for sure.
You sound like someone trying to stop tanking with the gold plan now. The thing about which I think is just brutal. But I don't have a solution for you.
Like, hey, buddy, you're 17 and you're 2 under on the front 9.
You're playing great.
So guess what's happened? Your handicap because of that is now moved up to a 6.
Well, we already know that, though, that you can discourage sandbagging. There are apps that do that. There are websites that you can search someone's rounds and then say, like, okay, obviously
but you
are a cheater.
But you can't do anything about that during the round other than calling the guy out. This would just be like, you've played so well on the front that you are now not going to have – you're not getting 2 strokes on 16 now because you played so well on the front.
Right. Maybe at the turn.
Yeah.
The adjustment at the turn.
That's all I mean, at the turn.
Yeah, I don't really have a well thought out answer for you.
I mean, it's a brand new idea.
It is.
You want to play our little game?
Ooh. In a minute.
Yeah,
because I had something else I was going to mention here about the preseason. What was it? We teased who's going to play tonight. Drake May.
The Falcons, right? Is that tonight also?
Falcons, no Penix, no Cousins. You said it's Easton Stick.
Easton Stick is going to play for them.
The Falcons and the Lions.
Shedeur Sanders tonight against the Panthers. Are we going to see Tet McMillan for Carolina?
And Bryce Young.
I'm getting excited a little bit about Tet McMillan. A lot of good reviews from camp and chemistry with Bryce Young, and I'm revisiting what he was as a prospect. I never thought about him because the Bills didn't have a shot at him. No. And usually those bigger physical receivers are not my types of guys, but it feels like he's going to be good.
One thing the preseason is, and whatever, revisiting, opening old wounds or revisiting old conversations, it is a time to really confirm your priors. Let's say you had like 3 or 4 guys you loved in the draft. They can be quarterbacks, defensive ends, wide receivers, running backs, and he has a big game in the preseason. You're like, I knew it.
Yeah.
I knew he's going to be a difference maker. Uh-huh. I've been talking to you today about Seattle's Torrey Horton, who was a 5th-round pick. But I remember him. The Bills did have him in for a visit, and then he went 4 picks before they picked
in the
5th round. So, I don't know. That's just a guy that I remember us talking about a little bit as like a late pick, 4th round maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And as it kind of played out that way, they go with I keep forgetting the safety's name. Help me remember.
Jordan Hancock.
And then Jackson Hawes are the two guys they did get in the 5th round. Which is fine. It's kind of like when you have your own, I'll make it fantasy football. You have your own fantasy draft and you don't get a guy. You're like, yeah, he was a little too pricey for me. And then week one in fantasy, he goes for 202 touchdowns. Like,
I knew it.
I should have done it. But anyway, Torrey Horton had a couple of catches last night for Seattle. He's getting positive reviews. He's one of the players the Bills had in for a visit. Isaac Tesla was another one. He went like 3 picks before the Bills in the 4th round.
He plays tonight too?
He plays for the Lions, had a couple of catches last week. So anyway.
Yep. Lions play tonight.
They had a lot of guys in for visits across many positions. And, you know, defensive back was one of those positions as well. Like Trey Amos, are we keeping an eye on him? Because if we go all the way back to Kyer Elam, that was McDuffie goes, and then the Bills take Elam. And you're not mad about that in the moment, but then 3 years later, what is it? Like, oh my God, McDuffie's amazing, and Elam can't play. So, you know, you have your draft crushes, and the preseason is one last chance to kind of flirt with the idea of what they might have been.
Yeah. By the way, very quickly, so we have a minute here. On Elam, do we not care at all what he does in Dallas?
Do not care at all.
Do fans not care at all what he does in Dallas?
Do not care at all.
Because it is camp. So it's like, you know, this is not the same as if it was happening in the regular season.
So far I saw one intercepted pass and one lifted baby from the crowd.
Yeah, like I saw an article yesterday that was like the three standouts at Cowboys camp, and he's on the list. Like he's having a great camp. He's going to start for them.
Okay.
It doesn't matter at all to people?
Not at all.
If he like becomes a real player in Dallas?
Put it this way. Wyatt Teller does not really matter to me that much. And Wyatt Teller was a guy that...
But he comes up.
Oh, he does come up, but he never really had moments. It was just kind of like, all right, he's out of here, and then he's great. All right, more power to him. Elam,
but he's
he's
a 5th-round pick, though, that's Wyatt Teller.
Here's one thing about Elam. I'll make a prediction. If he is good, the number one person that will not let you forget about it is you. Because you have been staunch the entire time that the idea that he's bad is oversold.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And I'm not here to fight you on it. Just, I don't care, but I feel like you're going to make me care because you're going to, if he ends up being good for Dallas, you're going to say he wasn't bad here, and now he's on another team, and now he's good.
Yeah. That kind of was tougher to argue when the AFC Championship looked the way it did.
Right. He wasn't prepared for that, and
His numbers over time with the Bills were, like, in the games.
We're fine.
We're completely fine. He had a bad game against Jacksonville. He had a bad game in the AFC Championship game. And maybe there's, like, one other. But, like, otherwise, he was fine. Totally fine when he was in the games. But they clearly didn't trust him. And they clearly didn't like the type of player he was.
No.
And I think, you know, Dallas might be perfect for him. I've even mentioned that. That, like, he wants to take risk. He's also going to hold a lot. And you know what? What'd he do in the Pittsburgh playoff game? He did hold. Bad penalty. What'd he do in the next play? Makes up for it with a great interception.
Yeah.
On a guy that's tough to cover. Remember it was Deontay Johnson he was covering?
Yeah.
So you're probably right. Like, I will think about it. But also because it would be different. It would be unique. What did Steve Tasker tell us last week?
Nobody leaves and has success.
Sean McDermott and the Bills, they do not like the idea of somebody leaving and playing their best football somewhere else. And to be fair, you can't really point to many of those.
Well, I would say half the reason.
Wyatt Teller, maybe.
Half the reason for that might be that they do often re-sign their own, and they're also they get some glow-up picks like your Beasleys and your Browns, where you're taking veterans and putting him with a stud quarterback. And then the other kind of guy that leaves is the guy that is, all due respect, dusty, gone. Cooper, Douglas,
right.
Vaughn, Poyer. Like
they're done with them, there's nothing left in the tank.
They squeeze as much as there is, and then it's time to. Mitch Morse, a year from retirement.
Yeah, right.
Tre'Davious White, banged up and done. Now he's back, and they're going to get a little bit more out of him. But that might not always be the case. Daquan Jones, like when he's done here, it's what? Then there are fit conversations. Jordan Phillips, he leaves, he comes back. And when he's done, like they've used them all up. Shaq Lawson, used up, right? It might not be the case on every player, but I feel like you don't see good young talent get away from them.
No. The Teller it's why he is even the only guy I can think of. For
right.
this. He might be the only one.
Yeah, and if Elam is great, yeah, I'm not going to worry about it too much.
Yeah.
803-0550. It's a good question, though. It's a good point. We've got a fun game to play. Should we remember some guys too? We do it on Football Fridays.
We should.
We could remember,
you remember
some guys.
Some Giants.
We could remember some Giants, or we could remember some Bills preseason guys.
That's good too.
To celebrate the final preseason game at the stadium, which is Saturday, tomorrow. We'll do something like that. 803-0550 on WGR. All right. Good morning, Jeremy and Joe. Thanks for hanging out. Happy Friday. Bills preseason opener is tomorrow. Three games in the league tonight as well. Mike and Tonawanda, quick check-in. Hey, Mike, what's up?
What's going on, guys? So I was happened to be on Facebook yesterday, and a little clip popped up. I don't know when it's from, but it was Nick Wright, and he was talking about how there's only been one quarterback in NFL history that has seven or more playoff wins without a Super Bowl appearance. And also in the same breath, too, he said, there's also only two head coaches that have eight playoff wins or more that hasn't gotten to the Super Bowl. And it was Sean McDermott and another coach. I can't remember the name, but Josh was the other quarterback. So my question is, it's like, I mean, are we going to start to eventually get to a point here where they're on these wrong lists or on these wrong graphics that they show on TV about teams or players that just was good but just couldn't get it done, you know? But yeah. I was kind of shocked to hear that, you know, with Josh, because he does have seven playoff wins. And he's the only one in history with that many wins to not get to a Super Bowl. It's kind of mind-blowing when you think of the history of the league and all the players that's played, you know?
Yeah. Thanks, Mike. I think they're on that list. You know, on the list, list for the wrong reasons. They are good. It's a list of good teams, but on the wrong end of it. I think they're already there.
It's their version of the Bills going to four straight Super Bowls and not winning one, isn't it? Shows how incredible you are, and it also is a little bit embarrassing to you, right?
Yep.
It's kind of just the modern version of it.
Yeah, I think they're already kind of there.
Because really, like, I don't think people like that fact. When we had our draft party and ESPN put the graphic up of most wins without reaching the Super Bowl, people booed.
Yeah. I have some trivia that kind of ties in with this. The thing about it that might protect them is that the Ravens have the same thing right now.
Right, is Lamar only not the answer to that because he's missed more games with injury?
Yeah, but Lamar is the only two-time MVP to not have a Super Bowl.
Right.
Every other two-time MVP has a Super Bowl. And if Josh wins the MVP this year, now there are two of them if he doesn't win the, you know. So it's these two and McDavid. That's where we're at. 803-0550. We'll remember some preseason Bills. I'll give you that trivia question. Owen's created a game, right, too, for us to have a little fun with based on our Bills Mafia game.
Mm-hmm.
You're on Facebook, Mike. Careful. There's some crazy Bills stories out there that are obviously not true. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Jeremy and Joe on WGR.